Thank you, Joe. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to take you through a little historical perspective of Los Angeles County. And as I give you a little brief overview of what I'm going to talk about today, I'll talk about how the backlog was created, so to speak, why, for me, on my soapbox, backlogs are actually a false metric. It's really something that I find is a meaningless number. We'll review some of the statistics from the program and then what the next steps are for us at LA. Just a quick overview so everybody understands what LA County comprises. Pretty large county, probably larger than a majority of the states in the union. 11 million people, 4,000 square miles. We have 88 cities with 47 independent police departments that operate within LA County, and we provide service specifically for DNA to every one of those agencies except for one, and that's the city of Los Angeles, who has their own crime lab. And in fact, the data I'm going to present today is only for all the areas of Los Angeles, excluding the city. If we added the city to it, these numbers would easily double just because of the numbers that the city has been dealing with. A little bit about the lab. We not only provide service to the Sheriff's Department, but all those cities as well. About 50 other law enforcement agencies when you factor in things like Cal State University Police or Amtrak Police and all these other interesting police departments that operate at a local, state, and federal level. Our lab's about 300 sworn and professional staff, and we get about 80,000 evidence submissions a year. So it's a pretty large operation, which when you see the numbers, you'll understand the perspective. So how does the backlog emerge in LA? Well, it started with some local attention. Our partners across the way at the city were going through their sexual assault kit backlog program. It caught the attention of the LA Times several times. Then the Human Rights Watch got involved and wrote a very detailed report about what was going on in the city of Los Angeles, trying to raise awareness issues, seeing that LA was a place to start, and they have pledged to move forward all across this country, so don't worry, you'll get your chance too. Concerns were raised by the local rape treatment center operators, and so all these things culminated into the sheriff's office, at which point in time a policy decision was made, and the sheriff's policy decision was, if a sexual assault kit is collected, then it will be tested. End of discussion. That is the effect of triage. And that's exactly what we have now in both the city of Los Angeles and in Los Angeles County. If a kit is obtained, it will be tested, regardless of merit or other issues or circumstances in the case. So we needed to get a handle then on how many kits we actually have now and then worry about what's going to come in the door tomorrow. So we initiated a hand count. It was an inventory of all the freezers. We got parkas for everyone. Off they marched, and they did an inventory and counted 6,113 sexual assault kits that were in local storage at some location or another. Now, while that inventory was being completed, we also generated a database, and the database is because we did not have a LIMS system that was capable of integrating information from independent law enforcement agencies with the crime lab. So we needed a way of tracking these, and our existing LIMS was not capable of doing it. So this was the first of many databases that were created in order to help us manage this particular problem. So as we started going through the data, what we then tried to determine was this is a hand count of everything that exists, because some of these kits may have actually been returned to those storage locations already analyzed. The question then was, well, how many of these kits were previously worked? And that number ended up being just over 1,400. So that left our magic starting number of 4,675 unanalyzed sexual assault kits that were now part of our backlog with the breakdown that you see. And if you can imagine what happened in the laboratory, we went from having about 25 cases that were pending and are needed to be done according to the investigators and law enforcement to having 4,675 cases just in a matter of days. Hence my reason for why backlog is a meaningless number. Why is it meaningless? Well, first of all, backlog is really a measurement of inputs. It's not a measurement of productivity at all. In fact, it doesn't even measure efficiency. And that's unfortunately what a lot of policymakers get wrapped up with. A good example of that is the NIJ Convicted Offender Program. Many of you have known for the last several years, NIJ has graciously funded convicted offender backlog reduction programs. And from the start of that funding till today, the backlogs have actually grown, not decreased. And it's not because people aren't working. In fact, we've gotten more efficient. It's that more states have added either arrestee laws or additional laws on the books that are now collecting more and more samples. So the idea of a backlog is a static number. It's really a slice in time and doesn't give you a real full perspective on efficiency. It also doesn't tell you anything about productivity or turnaround time, which is oftentimes what we, even ourselves as crime lab managers and supervisors, get wrapped up in. A good example of that is in Orange County, California. Very little or low backlog. Through programs that were initiated with batching and other things, we went from processing about 3,000 samples a year to over 13,000 samples a year, and during that same time frame, our backlog went from essentially zero to over 2,500 cases waiting to be done simply because of property crimes. So even though our turnaround time and our productivity increased four and five times over, our backlog went through the roof. So policymakers, unfortunately, relying on backlogs, are looking at this magic number and they want to see it go away, and they don't realize that there's really no connection between inputs and productivity and the number that they're asking for in the public. So that's really an educational piece that we have to be wary of. I only mention this because it's a soapbox item for me, because we get wrapped up in it too, and I think we need, as professionals in this field, to stop using that term, or at least defining what it means when we do use it, because it can be viewed erroneously and actually come back to bite us. Backlogs are not controlled by the laboratory. Because they're inputs, it's controlled by our client users. It's controlled by the crime rates, which can go up and down. I don't know about you, but our property crime rates are plummeting in Los Angeles, and yet our level of submissions in the laboratory continues to increase. That's, again, we're a victim of our own success. So we have to be careful of the terms we use. Well, going back to the LA problem, when we were in the survey phase, we decided to triage the cases based on the potential probative value. We designed an audit questionnaire that went out to all the law enforcement agencies. We asked for a two-week turnaround time, which for the most part proved okay, but for larger agencies or those that had a significant number of kits, like in the thousands, that proved to be an inadequate amount of time for the very same reasons that Kevin just described about getting surveys returned. Not enough data, no LIMS, no database exists to track this kind of information. We did have overall about a 75% return rate, and we followed up with the personal touch on those that we didn't get any response from. And here are the categories that we broke down that we found useful. Category one being an unknown suspect, those would be given priority. And I might mention that unlike other agencies' experience, very few of these cases were what we would typically call the stranger rape situation. They were, for investigative purposes, the investigator, even though it was an unknown suspect, really had no desire to be pursuing this case in the first place. Known suspect cases, DA rejects, those that have been adjudicated, incomplete audit returns, and some in which the elements of the crime had not even been established. So here's the overall breakdown, and I hope those in the back can read some of the numbers. I tried to get this as large as I could, but we ended up, of the 6113, we ended up with about 6,073 cases that actually met the merits of working under this program, with an approximate percentage breakdown of 31% that had been analyzed and 69% that had not been analyzed in our inventory. And so focusing on the 69%, this is the breakdown based on category. Only 20% of those cases were actually unknown suspect. All the rest met all the criteria of the other category: known suspect, DA reject. These were essentially cases that wouldn't typically be worked by most crime labs, because most of the time investigations wouldn't be submitting them. There was really no probative value in knowing that information. For example, many of the known suspect cases happened to be situations where the assailant was known. There was no question that there was an act of some sexual related issue, but it was just an issue of consent. Well, a DNA test isn't going to resolve the issue of consent. That's an investigative process. So conducting the DNA test on those types of cases was not probative in the sense of the investigation, which is why many of these cases were never submitted in the first place. It'll be very interesting to see over time how this data kind of shakes out, and we'll get to it a little bit later as Dr. Joe Peterson will talk about some of the work that Cal State LA is pursuing on that. Now, we ran into the obvious dilemma that most of you would have. When you go from nothing, 25 cases, to 4,675, you just don't have the resources to do that overnight. So we chose the outsourcing component. We now use a total of 7 laboratories that help us out. We have 5 contract private laboratories. We also have assistance from 2 law enforcement agencies. One is California DOJ and the other is Marshall University, who are assisting us with the testing. We did take some time to get this ramped up. It took time to get contracts developed in place, the metrics that we needed. We needed to deal with some of the laboratory audits, which were just some of the startup procedural issues to get through. We started sending off at the early stages about 20 kits a month. 20 to 60 kits a month. We're now actually sending more than 500 kits per month out to these private laboratories. As you can imagine, that's a huge undertaking. That's a lot of work to be putting through and getting out to these entities. Our funding, as you may wonder where this is all coming from, is actually paid for NIJ grant funding. Thank you very much, NIJ. Local Prop 69 funding, which is a DNA funding component in California. For those that aren't from California, there was a bill passed several years ago that for every felony conviction, $1 out of every $10 that's collected in fine money actually gets held back for the purposes of DNA testing. 75% of that stays locally, and 25% of it goes to California DOJ to help deal with the convicted offender programs there. And then we also had department funds. Now, with every crisis comes opportunity, and we had our crisis, and fortunately for us, we got our opportunity as well. This resulted in an additional $2.3 million from our local Board of Supervisors to ensure that this problem doesn't resurface again. We have actually been able to accomplish, to date, everything on our project without even using that funding. We don't know whether it'll be there or not, given our budget cuts that we're facing, but at least at this point, we have not dipped into that allocation. We did request additional personnel. We saw the bottlenecks that would be coming, and the one significant one was sending all these cases out. When they come back in, somebody's got to review the data. Somebody's got to spend the time to upload them. And so we projected that, and we asked for additional personnel. So we have 6 new DNA analysts and 1 additional supervisor to help out with this dilemma. And then we just recently were awarded a grant award from NIJ, which will help us with our continuing backlog efforts. So what are some of the interesting numbers to date? Well, so far we've outsourced over 94% of the identified untested sexual assault kits. This problem happened, as some of my LA colleagues will know, really the meltdown was a date they'll never forget, November 1st, 2008. It's a date etched in their memory. And so since that time, we actually can see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's starting to feel like, wow, we're going to get through this. So that's 4,028 cases out of the 4,271 that were sent out. Of those, 41% were negative for the biological screen, and 59% were positive for biological screen. And that's a very interesting number, because I think empirically I've always held that, you know, roughly 60 to 70% of those cases come up positive. And here is actual data over thousands of cases, which kind of confirms what we've known all along. Of those 59% that were positive, 37% qualified for CODIS upload, 27% failed to meet the upload criteria, and the other 36% are pending data review. And you might think the 36% is relatively high, but that's only 430 cases, and it's sending 500 cases out a month. That's really only 1 month's work of data that has to be reviewed and entered. So it's really not that far behind, even though that percentage may make it seem like it's rather high. Well, what does this mean from the public perspective? Because I always love to ask that question, and as a taxpayer, I guess my first question is, well, how much did this wonderful plan cost us? Well, so far, we've spent $1.7 million to test these kits. Well, on average now, this is just really rough average, right? This is not the true cost per kit, but if you just take that $1.7 million into the number of kits we've done, that's about $850 a kit. So this is not inexpensive work, and that figure does not include any of the in-house time that we spend on data tracking, on searching for these kits, identifying the samples out of the kit that we're going to remove and send off, and the data review that happens afterwards. So when we look at the total cost of this program, it's going to far exceed what this number is, but that's where we are so far. And so the next logical question is, as our local politicians like to know, is, well, great, how many crimes have we solved? This is a bit misleading. The answer is two. We've had two cold hits that have actually led to a prosecution. Now, over the course of time, including our backlog program and the regular program, we've had about 150 hits. A majority of them are still under investigation, but of the 60 or so that they've actually pursued, most of them were DA rejects. Most of them were rejected because the case had already been adjudicated. It's only two so far that have actually led to something. And then this presents a very interesting social economic question of the value then of pursuing all of this work for those two cases. And it's very hard to look at these two and say that they're not important. And I don't want to be misheard by saying what I just said, because if we have brought resolution to two victims who have gone through a horrific incident, then that is time and money well spent. I think what we need to ask ourselves, and again, this is, I think, the interesting study that Dr. Peterson will be doing, at what point can we look at, instead of just barrage and doing them all, is there some scientific way in which we should proceed through cases? Is there some real merit to saying we're going to triage cases in this fashion because we have data to show that you tend to get more probative value and better results when you proceed in this fashion? So that'll be a very interesting study to pursue. A couple of things of what worked and what didn't. First of all, taking the time to inventory and fully assess the problem. We used existing performance metrics to carefully project our time. As it stands now, we told our Board of Supervisors it was going to take a certain amount of time. We're going to be completing this well ahead of the time we told them. However, we hope that at least we're not telling them that at this point. We're telling everything's going to, we're going to be meeting out on time, but our goal is that we're going to be done well ahead of where we have planned on. Our immediate chain of command at our local division level really understood the issues, and that helped bridge some of the gaps between the upper department executives who really didn't understand this process. Anecdotally, the sheriff thought, well, we could just do like we do in jails, right? Just bring in a platoon, lay out a bunch of temporary tables, let's have an assembly line. We should get this done over the weekend, right? We had highly dedicated staff that were motivated to get this done. Some things that didn't work. I mentioned already we didn't have a LIMS system, and that was a huge impediment to us. We were designing databases on the fly, and if we could go back, we'd even do it all over again. But we are where we are, and it is what it is. We did not account for evidence staff, and that was really a failure on our part. The idea that we have now 4,000 more items that have to be transacted multiple times back and forth, we really should have thought of adding additional staff to our evidence control function. And then, of course, what didn't work was convincing the executives that this really wasn't the best strategy to pursue this testing. But again, you know, when it's political, time is of essence, and so getting those answers quickly is important. And so what do we look forward to? We look forward to dealing with our increased productivity with robotics and new technology. Automation and technology are going to revolutionize what we do. We're getting that in now. We have some new submission forms, so we're trying this triage process that we worked on this series. We're doing that now with cases that are coming in, since everything that's collected will be tested. We're moving toward batching, so we should see some significant increases, much like other labs, usually on the order of, you know, multiple times over, two, three, four times the productivity. We're still struggling with increased follow-up by investigators on CODIS hits. That, I know, is an issue that plagues many different jurisdictions, and we're no different. We do need increased productivity on our CODIS reviews, and I guess I'm daring to tap dance on some of the current hot-button issues right now, and I don't want to suggest that we need changes to the way CODIS is being dealt with, but one of the things that we're looking at is whether or not we can really look at some true software-type components that can help us out with these mixture interpretations. There's good systems out there, and they do well with single or two-person mixtures, but beyond two people, they really just don't cut the mustard, and I think what we need is we need some groundbreaking work to pursue that, and we're actually working with some individuals now who are some real prodigies with computerized systems. I joke with my staff, and I've told them, you know, if these guys can put design missile systems to put missiles thousands away on a target and be within a few inches, then by God, they got to be able to interpret a few DNA profiles. It can't be that hard. And then future limitations will be turnaround time. And actually, Kevin touched on this a little bit as well. And I think it's really the speed of information. And there's actually a whole session on some of this later. But I think the future limitation of crime labs is not going to be so much the technology, because I think it's here. It's the speed of information flow. When we do studies and we look at time motion studies, a significant amount of time, and I'm talking 40, 50, sometimes 60% of our time, is about moving information from one area to another. It's copying information, biographical information for a report, putting data onto worksheets. That's the kind of stuff that's going to kill us in productivity. And until we get some real systems in to be able to make this faster, we're not going to see bounds and leaps in productivity, because the automation's here. It's all about moving that information flow. And lastly, our goal is all the same, right? It's to provide information. We're not concerned necessarily about who we help, but ideally what we want to do is we want to hold those who've committed crimes accountable, and those who have been wrongly accused, we want to assist in exonerating them from their hold on law enforcement. So my review of the quote-unquote backlog problem in L.A. So thank you for your time.